You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I'm actually joined by Brad DeGraw of AmazonSherpa.com. That's right. We're going to talk today about something completely unrelated to real estate because it's something that just really interests me. So Brad is actually a self-proclaimed Amazon nerd. He's an e-commerce entrepreneur who started with $100 in a Wi-Fi connection and turned it into over $1 million in Amazon sales. He's a successful entrepreneur, he's an author, he's a speaker, he's a consultant known for sharing his techniques. His team has launched a dozen successful brands on Amazon. I'd love to introduce you to him. So Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Man, thanks so much for coming on, man. I'm super excited to talk about this.
Let's do it.
So you're not my typical guest, which is a real estate investor, but I think a lot of our audience is they're entrepreneurs and they're, you know, they're going to be very interested in hearing about an Amazon business. And it's something that's super close to me because back in the day before I even got into real estate, I had a few different eBay businesses and even did some real estate through eBay. And it seems like now over the last so many years, a lot of those same folks that have been on eBay have sort of transitioned their business to Amazon. And like you have really found a home there and you're crushing it. I guess talk to us a little bit about, you know, how long you've been in Amazon and how you even found your way into building an online business on Amazon.
Absolutely. I've been doing this for 4 years and my start's very humble. I got fired too many times and I realized I'm going to have to do something different. I know how to create value, but I can't keep getting fired. So I started with $100 and a Wi-Fi connection. Someone gave me a book and said, hey, read this. It's the idea of arbitrage, which means you can buy low in one market and sell higher in another market. So you just reprice as you move markets. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started. It was literally buying clearance merchandise from stores that they were not my brands, they're existing brands. And that was great. I made over $100,000 my first year. And then I realized, you know, it's just another glorified job. So it evolved into like creating custom bundles, that evolved into private label, that evolved into what we do now, which is actually making unique products.
So wait, so when you first started out and you made $100,000 in your first year, you were literally just going into like retail stores, buying clearance items and then reselling them online?
Yeah, that's how I started.
No, and still made $100,000 at that.
Yes. Yeah. And it's still a viable model. Now, just keep in mind, it's not a real business. It's sure. A job. You're just literally a personal shopper.
Well, can you not leverage that up? Is there a way to scale that to where you had a bunch of shoppers out there?
I've heard of one or two people who have been able to leverage it up. A smarter way to do that, rather than physically going to the stores, you can do online arbitrage, which is literally going to like toysrus.com/clearance. And buying the clearance online merchandise, ship it to yourself, then reship it to Amazon. So yeah, it's possible.
You know, I actually have a buddy in my Collective Genius Mastermind who his business partner put together an Amazon business, and they're able to bid on truckloads of merchandise. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm not sure if it's seconds or clearance items or what it is. And then they would turn around and sell that on Amazon. They've built a pretty big viable business that way.
That's another model.
So how does that work? Are there retailers out there, I guess, that just sell in bulk all their stuff that they don't want to sell in the stores?
Yeah, they could even be buying it indirectly from Amazon. So Amazon loses and destroys a lot of merchandise.
Okay.
And truckloads a day. And so they use liquidators to just get rid of it because they don't even know what they have. And then you can buy, like you said, a pallet, a truckload. There's no limit to what you can buy. And then you'd have to sort it. You're going to have a little bit of warehouse space to throw out the garbage and sell what's sellable.
Yeah, I gotcha. So you did this on a very small scale. You were literally going into local just retailers, in your backyard and buying clothing and whatever other items there were and then reselling them on Amazon. That's how you
started. In the beginning, I started with cosmetics. I have no idea. I don't wear makeup, but it's seasonal. So the colors change according to the season, but that doesn't mean women don't want those colors year round. So it was nice because they closed out that season. They were getting ready for a new season, so I could literally just buy a bunch of cosmetics, and it worked.
That's so interesting. And you did that for a year, and you just kept it warehoused at yourself? You'd buy it, bring it home, and
well, the nice thing is, with the model that I do, you don't have to have a warehouse. You can literally buy things and you ship them into Amazon's warehouses. They have warehouses all over the United States. So we ship it in bulk to Amazon and they a la carte it out to the customers as those orders come in.
And did you figure that out from the get-go, or did that take some figuring out? Hey, I don't need to keep this at my house. I can just ship it to Amazon.
No, that's a day one strategy.
Really? So right out of the gates, you were shipping whatever you found just directly to Amazon and they warehoused it for you.
Exactly.
Okay, so how did you then morph from that? I guess you clued in, okay, this is a lot of work. This is more than I want to do, into actually your next step, which I think was what, private labeling?
Yeah, so we went from doing onesie twosies to doing bundles. So instead of selling singles, we sold triples.
Okay.
And then it went into private label. So we realized, hey, these water filters are doing great. What if we reached out to the manufacturer and had our name on them? Instead of having such a limited clearance supply, what if we reached out and we know this refrigerator water filter does really well? What if we just put our name on it? And that was great. In fact, my first product was Garcinia Cambogia. I was watching Dr. Oz, and we got in fairly early. It was a magic pill. It's a skinny pill. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, you want to make sure the active ingredient is 50% HCA minimum. And that's what the market was displaying, 50%. And my logic suggested that we wanted to be a step and a half above everyone else. So more is better. That's kind of our common thought. Next would be 60. So we went with a 65% HCA. And that was great. We were a step ahead about everybody for a good year.
And then everybody else figured out, hey, we could add more of this HCA and get more sales.
Exactly. So 60 came on the market. We're still a little bit ahead. 70 came on and we started to trickle behind, and then we just moved into other products, because instead of having a product-based business, we have a market-based business.
Sure.
Which means we're not just selling skinny pills, we're selling to people who are interested in weight loss.
So just to get this straight, you literally went to just a local manufacturer who, I guess, dealt in supplements and said, hey, can you custom compound this for me? They said yes. And then, hey, will you throw my label on the bottle? They said yes. And then you sold it as if it was your own product on Amazon.
Exactly. And yeah, you can use stock formulas, or you can use something custom. Either way, we like to do things custom. This way, we can stand out from the rest of the pack.
How many of the folks that were selling this that same supplement on, or just supplements in general on Amazon, are basically doing that? Just private labeling versus actually manufacturing themselves?
Tons. Most everybody.
Most everybody's doing that. It's just, there's probably a handful of manufacturers that are doing it for just a bunch of different retailers.
Mm-hmm.
That is so interesting. Because, yeah, you go on Amazon and really look for any product, and it just seems like there's tons of different products or supplements or nutritional this or that. And you've got so many to choose from. It's like, how do you decide? They're probably all coming from the same manufacturer, just slapping a different label on them.
In many cases, they are.
Wow. That's so interesting. So you started with that supplement, and then where did you go from there?
You know, we realized that was a great market. We'd actually call people and say, hey, how are you enjoying it? And something crazy happened. When we called people, we realized a third of the people didn't even open the bottle, and they would reorder. They'd see another commercial or an ad come on, and they'd just order again. So we knew we had people who were just addicted to scratching this itch. So from the pills, went to weight loss programs, so like 90-day fitness, to resistance bands, to portion control. There's no end to the amount of products once you dial into a market.
No, did you do videos, like a 90-day fix with those videos, or what was that?
Yep, actual workout videos with a fitness model, you know, lifting the legs and touching the toes, the whole thing.
Are you serious? So you actually hired somebody and filmed it yourself?
It is work. It's a lot of work to get this in. But yeah, I'm not a fitness guru, so hiring out the talent's the only option for that.
So you put up some upfront money, found some talent, got the whole film crew and edited it and put it on a DVD, I guess?
Yeah, and it's easier than you might think. You don't have to do all the work. Just team up with someone else who has that same interest. So find someone else who wants to do a workout video. Find someone else who wants to be in a workout video. You can team up with other folks. And you don't have to do everything.
And that's sold on Amazon without really any outside advertising? People just were searching for 90-day fix or whatever, and they found you guys?
Oh, yeah. We launched. We were the number one best-selling women's workout.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Yep. Did you launch? Was there any sort of marketing outside of Amazon, or is it only on Amazon?
A little bit of both. Amazon is its own ecosystem. So if you only want to focus there, you don't have to worry about too much. They have their own buyers. The credit cards are already on file. The addresses, everything's set up there. So anyone getting started, I'd say just focus on Amazon because your metrics are simple. The only thing you have to focus once you have a product is traffic and conversion. That's your business.
Hmm. So getting people to actually find it, see it, and then ultimately buy it.
Yep. It's such a simple model.
So what are some of the areas that you've developed products in? And just curious, how many products do you guys have out there now?
So let's see, we're in babies, pets, survival and privacy, sports outdoors, and sexual wellness.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a wide variety of stuff.
Yeah, our model, and it's a handful of different brands. Our model is we're after people's problems, fantasies, and desires. If we can tap into the problems, fantasies, and desires, we're going to build a business that's less of a commodity and more of an emotional experience. Hmm. And so we have around four dozen SKUs.
Man, so 50 different products in what, four or five different sort of market niches.
Mm-hmm.
So 10, maybe 10 products in a specific niche or so, something like that.
Ish, yeah.
Ish, somewhere around there. And is there one that, are there certain niches that perform better than others? Or just, I'm sure some products are home runs and some are not. I mean, how does that sort of flesh out for you guys?
Yeah, it's kind of a bell curve. So if you hold your hand out in front of you, that's the reality. Whether it's in business or life, everyone talks about the top 20%, 80-20. Well, that's really true for optimists, but the reality is it's a bell curve. So every time you have a home run, that's about the amount of times that you're going to have a dud. And a dud means every dollar you spend into it is just wasted. No one really wants that product. The market changed or you misinterpreted data. Things happen.
Yeah.
And then about half the time, 3 out of 5 times, it's a base hit or a double. You're making sales, but maybe not as fast as you like. Or you're making sales, but you trim the price to get better volume.
Give me an idea. What does a base hit look like in terms of ROI, you know, investment versus how much what your sales look like for a year?
You know, a base hit is something you're making 50% on and you're selling maybe 5 a day.
Okay.
So maybe you have a $30 product, but you're in it for, you know, after all said and done, $15.
Uh-huh.
And the commissions come out, so you're only making $7 on your 15. But you're making, you know, 5 sales a day.
I gotcha.
That's okay. No one's going to retire on that, but you may or may not reorder.
Yeah. I gotcha. So that I guess brings up another question: what do the commissions and fees look like? So if you're getting a 50% markup, you're not taking home 50%. That's not net profit. What comes out of that?
Here's kind of our rule of thumb: we want to hit minimum is what we call a triple double. So if my price on it, my landed cost into Amazon's warehouse is $10, and I sell it for $30, that's triple my investment. I'll double my investment. So I'll net $20 and that's my original 10 plus 10 profit.
Okay. That's what you're shooting for. Would you consider that like a double in terms of baseball metaphor?
And yeah, so yeah, that would be a double.
Okay.
And then a base hit would be like a double half.
I gotcha.
So really what we're aiming for when we're doing the research and we're strategizing, we want 5 to 10X. When we can do the math and everything looks good, and we're planning 5 to 10X, that's great because when things go wrong or you have extra expenses, then you can still miss a little bit and triple the price, double your investment, so on and so on.
I gotcha. In your experience, how often do you actually hit the 5 to 10X versus your tries, your attempts?
About 1 in 5.
1 in 5, okay. And if you know, for your base hits and your singles, do you eventually phase those products out, or you just keep them going because they still make money?
You know, and if we have something better to invest in, then we don't reorder. If we have nothing better to invest in, then we go ahead and reorder.
That's a good point in terms of the upfront investment. What's if you to bring a product to launch, what sort of upfront investment are you typically looking at?
You know, half the products I've ever launched, I've launched for less than $1,000, soup to nuts.
Really?
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be tons of money. But realistic expectation, if you have $5,000, you're comfortable. You can launch somewhere between 1 and 5 products. Depends on how many moving parts, the packaging, how complicated it is.
So let's say you know, $1,000 is just kind of what you're averaging. What does mm-hmm. that? How does that break down? What does that go into for the product launch?
So, well, it really depends on what kind of product. Let's use the Garcinia as an example. That's Perfect. Easy math. My unit cost was $5. So it was $4 and change. That includes the label, the caps, everything. Minimum order was 96 units. That was 4 24 cases. But for easy math, let's call it 100. Mm-hmm. So I'm in that for $500. All I have to pay now is shipping to get this thing from Denver to Phoenix, where the warehouse is. Shipping is about 30 cents a pound. So we're looking at about $20 in shipping. So I was in it for $520. Now, I like to get reviews. We get reviews from bloggers. So not only do we get a review on Amazon, but we kind of cloud up social media with good things about our product. So there's another 50 units that I go ahead and give away.
That's how you get them to write about it? You don't have to pay them to write about it. You just give them the product for free?
Exactly. Yeah, it's better to just give it to them so they can have a review that's based on experience rather than just, well, it's my job to say good things. Mm-hmm. It's nice for them to have an experience.
Mm-hmm. And so you're looking for bloggers in that space. You got some bloggers out there that are, this is what they write about, nutritional products or something.
Exactly.
Okay. And you ship them some for free, and then hopefully they get some traffic from outside of Amazon. Now, if you didn't do that, I mean, do you still feel like Amazon, like you said, it's a sort of its own ecosystem? People are still going to find their way to your product without doing that?
They will. You can, that's just waiting for organic. But it's a business, and time is kind of a factor of money. Mm-hmm. So anywhere we can compress time, we're doing it. But yeah, you could wait for it to be organic. It's a little bit short-sighted to just wait for your organic results. We like to push and engineer those results.
Sure. Yeah, if you can, and it's not that expensive. You're just giving away product to do that. That's a pretty cheap way to do to get some mm-hmm. traffic. So your upfront investment, though, you're really just talking about shipping and ordering that first run, whatever the minimum is. What about expenses associated with coming up with a label and a design and the formula? Is there money associated with that?
There can be. We just used basic stock images for our art. Mm-hmm. I think it was a leaf and a picture of the fruit and then some font. That was our label.
And you did it yourself, like on Photoshop or something, or did you hire it out to somebody
else? A friend of mine, I said, hey man, would you do this and I'll buy you some beer? And he did it.
Are you serious?
So, but you can. I mean, there's cheap people on like Fiverr. If you want to go kind of towards the higher end, I would hire like 99 Designs. You run a contest, and some of the best designers in the world are there. And you're going to pay, you know, between $200 and probably $500.
Okay.
But now you have the best designers, and now you have their contact information. So in the future, you can work with them directly.
Gotcha.
So 99 Designs is a great place. We use them. You may also come out of pocket for copy. If you're not a great writer, hire a writer. So you're looking at maybe a couple $100 there. I wrote my own copy. You could kind of Frankenstein it together by looking at other people's listings and taking pieces and putting them together and rewording it and putting it in your own brand's voice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't want to do that, just pay someone.
So interesting. So the copy is really just like the description of the product and helps sell it when somebody's searching and they find your product and they're reading up on it. That the copy you're talking about is just really the description of it, right?
Yeah, and it does those two things. One, it dances with the search bots because we put the long tail keywords in there. Mm-hmm. And then two, people who actually have eyeballs and wallets are looking at it saying, well, of course I'm going to buy this. The question is, how many?
Yeah, right. And do I put it on autopilot where it's coming every month?
Exactly.
So interesting. Okay, so next question people are going to have, at least I have, is, okay, so this is how you bring a product to launch. How do you know what products to even go after? How do you know if something's going to sell or not? Surely there's a way to research this.
Yeah, so first you have to have a market. Pick a group of people who are passionate about spending money on a specific problem, fantasy, desire. It doesn't have to be weight loss, but for our example, let's go with weight loss. Let's look at where are they spending money? What are they spending money on? Once we can start looking at those things, you could just literally in Amazon type in weight loss products and see what comes up. And now we use a software called Jungle Scout. I didn't create Jungle Scout, but I think it's amazing. It's not a free software, but it's worth the money. It's less than $100. Get that. And with one button, you can see how many sales, both in terms of money and units.
That's crazy. So this Jungle Scout scrapes Amazon for you, collects all this data, and then you can figure out, okay, these types of products are selling really well, maybe these are not selling really well. And that's how you do your research of this might be a product we go into. Now, if you identify a product that is that a bunch of different people are selling, it's high competition, is that still something you'd be interested in? Or do you look for the low competition products?
You know, I like to find less than three savvy competitors. Okay. So there can be thousands of competitors, but I want to see if there are some that are as smart as me. Meaning, like, did they optimize the listing with their images and the copy and some of the more subtle and effective techniques? If there's no savvy competition, wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't go up against Nike for running shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it's something like, I don't know, earplugs for dogs, there's no default leader in that space.
Is that even a product?
I don't know. I'm just looking probably at the dog. someone could make something. I don't know. I've never seen it.
Wait, so that's another question, though. Does niche work for you better than anything else, like a real specific product?
Well, yeah. We look at the products that exist on the marketplace, and then we read the 1, 2, and 3-star reviews. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sometimes you get enough customer insight about their missed expectations that you change the product a lot, and sometimes it's very little. Sometimes the only thing you change is the packaging. But yeah, the more niche you can be, the better, because we're not really selling products. It sounds so crazy. Yeah, they get something in the box, but we're really selling people's identity. And so the more emotion we can create, the better our business will be.
And I guess a lot of that comes through in the copy, and the way you write it is appealing to that emotion.
And the images. We do a lot of judgment in our images. So there are a lot of subtle things we do with the imagery.
What do you mean by that? So give me an example of how you would maybe manipulate some imagery to appeal to the emotion.
So our subconscious mind is really what makes all the decisions. Our conscious mind takes the credit and justifies it after it figures out a good logical reason. But for example, lines of focus is one. So if you had a flashlight or a pen, there's obviously a line of focus. Even though you can't see it, we're not drawing or shooting a beam out, but there's a line of focus. Our eyes want to go a specific direction based on what's available in that image. So we want to put those lines of focus towards the buy button, so towards the right side of the screen versus the left side of the screen. The left side of the screen is off the page. It's into the room that you're in. We don't want to get people involved in reality. We want to get them involved in the buying process. So we'll put all of the lines of focus towards the buy button.
Really? I'm sure I've been manipulated by that before on Amazon. I had no idea.
It's crazy. And you see this even in the grocery store. They do things with the colors and the fonts. And we didn't create any of this. We're just using what's worked for couple centuries.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that people have researched this for years and figured out what works. Although it is different online, and I'm assuming that images too, the higher the quality of the image, probably the higher the likelihood that you get sales off of it versus just a crappy picture taken on your kitchen table or something.
Yeah. No one should use their iPhone. actually pay a graphic artist, even if they're creating the product image from scratch, have an artist create the image rather than use an iPhone. So making the image zoomable, colorful, create a lifestyle image rather than what they call a hero shot. A hero shot is just like a product on a white background. That was good enough a few years ago, but now people want to see it out of the box. They want to see it in its environment because we're selling the emotional experience, not the, you know, 3 fluid ounces. So, you know, show it, babies and puppies and kittens, those increase conversion as well.
Really? So if you're selling dog food, you're not going to just show the bag, you're going to actually show a dog eating the dog food or something.
Exactly.
Huh. And you found that that makes a big difference?
About 2 to 3%.
Crazy. So, you know, you and your business, you've got almost 50 SKUs out there, different products. How often are you researching new products?
Constantly. We have Jungle Scout on every computer here at the office, and then everyone on our team also has it.
And so, like, in any of your spare time, you guys are just researching what's the next product we can bring to launch.
Exactly. It never stops. We're always analyzing opportunities.
So how many new products are going to bring to launch like this year?
We'll do, between now and the end of the year, we'll do probably another 15 products.
Wow. So more than one a month you're launching.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. And so what does your team look like? You got 50 products out there. How have you built a support staff to handle the volume?
Oh, I'm crazy passionate about this. This is like a whole nother show. We have a small team in the Philippines. So my wife and I live here in Denver. We have two leaders in the Philippines, and they each lead a team of 5. So we're 12 people offshore.
Wow. And so what do your folks overseas do? What do your VAs handle?
Well, they run everything, the whole day-to-day operation. So like after this call, I'll jump on with them and just get a daily update. Hey team, what's going on? Do you need any training? Do you need anything? So they look for inventory discrepancies. Mm-hmm. So even though we shipped in 1,000 units, maybe 888 arrived. Well, someone needs to track down the other 112 products. Mm-hmm. Did they go missing? Are they damaged? Are they lost? And then seek reimbursement because things happen, but we need to get paid on it. They optimize for traffic and conversion, and they work with the graphic designers and the copywriters, and they run the ads, and they do all the little important things.
Because Amazon is doing all the fulfillment for you, right? I mean, you have a product, mm-hmm. you ship it directly to their warehouse, they're shipping it for you, they're keeping track of your inventory for you. Are they answering questions, or is that on you to answer questions?
No, they take care of all the questions.
Okay. So they're handling customer service questions for you. I mean, that's mm-hmm. unbelievable. I'm just curious, what does Amazon charge for that?
For the customer service side?
Well, for
or I guess, everything.
Fulfillment, everything, yeah.
You know, they have a flat fee of 15%. It can vary a little bit by your category, uh-huh. but let's say 15% for a commission. And then about $2 to pull and pack. So like pull it off the shelf, put it in a box, and tape up the box. Depending on if it's prime or not, that's kind of a net zero for you and the customer. They pay, the customer pays them. But all said and done, by the time we ship it in and there's some variable closing fees, we're in it for between 25 and 30% goes to Amazon.
Okay. All right. When it's all said and done. But still, have you calculated to see how that stacks up if you were to try to warehouse yourself and hire warehouse staff and handle the fulfillment on your end?
Yeah, for us, it's a no-brainer. They can do it cheaper than we can do it. And stuff happens. I mentioned, you know, losing inventory. If we lost it, it's our problem. If Amazon loses it, we get paid. So I don't want to own a forklift and have to worry about workers' comp and all these things. Leave it in Amazon's hands because they can do it better, faster, cheaper than we can.
So interesting. So what about manufacturing? Where are most of your products made? Are they made in the United States? Are they made overseas?
It's about half and half. So half the time we use U.S. manufacturers because that makes the most sense. Other times we use overseas. It's China. Okay. We'll use China just because that makes sense. Just different industries are better suited.
And are you sourcing most of those manufacturers like on Alibaba? I know that's the big sourcing site.
Alibaba is a quick and easy way. You could also go to trade shows. You can even look at the directory of the trade show. It's called the No-Show Trade Show. Hmm. So you just look at the floor plan, and then you can follow up with them a week or two later. There's a dozen ways, but Alibaba is the quickest and easiest.
Do you guys go to most trade shows for the categories that you guys are, or the industries that you're in?
Actually, I don't. I'm not a big fan of crowds.
Mm-hmm. So you can see who's on the list and still call those manufacturers directly, I guess.
Exactly.
Interesting. It is such an interesting business. I mean, it's funny. You're the first guy I brought on the show that was non-real estate related, because it just intrigues me. Because as real estate investors, you know, we're all about buying low and selling high. And that's essentially what you've done. You're creating your own product. It's, instead of real estate, it's whatever widget you're selling. And you're, you know, buying it low and selling it high and scaling it up into a, you know, a large business. And the fact, what are you selling gross? What are you looking at doing this year?
You know, it's tough to get exact numbers, just to stay a little bit private. But we're teetering between the high sixes and low sevens. We'll do seven. We'll cross that threshold this year.
So over $1 million business that you've built in 4 years on Amazon. What an amazing platform for an entrepreneur who just wants to work out of his house and doesn't have to actually touch any product. I mean, it's a phenomenal business.
Well, yeah, especially when you consider we started with $100 and a Wi-Fi connection.
I mean, yeah, right. It's $100,000 in your first year.
Yes.
There's so many people I guarantee listening to this who are working the 9-to-5, not making that are scratching their heads like, what am I doing? Why am I not selling crap online?
Well, the key is, you know, and I've been there. I've been the guy with a tie and saying yes, sir, and no, sir. And the key is you have to take some risks. You already know how to work harder. You wouldn't have a job. Mm-hmm. But you have to be willing to take the risk. And that way you get the reward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait, but they're not huge risks. Like you said, $1,000 maybe to bring a product. Even if it fails, you probably still get your money out of it and just stop doing it. But it's very little risk compared to buying a $100,000 house. You know, $1,000 to bring a product to launch. If it fails, okay, so maybe you're out $1,000. Big deal.
Well, and that's the nice thing. You know, in real estate, you can leverage, and that makes sense. That's a great tool there. Mm-hmm. In a business like this, you don't even need leverage. I mean, you could use credit cards if you need to. It's nice to get those points. We take a trip to Thailand every October on points. But this is something you could do in just a little bit of extra time, a little bit of extra risk, and you're set.
Crazy. So talk a little bit about, I know that you guys provide a service where you help people who want to get started in this business or bring a product to launch. What are some of your services? What do they look like?
Oh, yeah. So we teach people how to do what we do. So if you're looking to learn, just join us on AmazonSherpa.com. Or if you already have a product, this is great for people who have done maybe a Kickstarter campaign. They know they have a viable product but don't know how to launch in the next marketplace. We do a done-for-you service. So yeah, just catch us on AmazonSherpa.com and we'll connect. We'll either get you on the right track or get you going.
So you have a newsletter, is that right, that goes out, is it weekly or monthly, that just some updates and training and just free information on how to kind of get into the business and the latest trends and whatnot?
Yep, our newsletter comes out every Wednesday. We give you tips and tricks and strategies, what's working for us in our business, and how you can take one more step towards success.
Folks, we'll put that in the show notes. Again, it's AmazonSherpa.com. And again, I know this wasn't real estate related, but it was just super intriguing to me. I thought it was worth bringing Brad on. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Brad, thanks so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
You rock. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Take care, man. Hey folks, as a special bonus offer from today's episode with Brad DeGraw, we're going to put a copy of his product evaluation spreadsheet that he uses to evaluate a potential opportunity on Amazon. It's going to be in the show notes under Brad DeGraw's episode, again at dealfarm.net. Hope you enjoy.